Welcome to Candidate Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation focuses on the race for U.S. Senate, and we are joined by Democratic candidate Jessica Scorene. Jessica, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So we'll start with, why did you decide to run for U.S. Senate in this particular election cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. It is because our country is in crisis. And I think people recognize that, especially now in response to this COVID-19 pandemic, but these were all issues that we were facing before. And I really saw that firsthand and the effects of those crises on working people in our state through the work that I did with nonprofits. So in the 10 years that I have lived here in Delaware, I threw myself into volunteerism through tutoring and mentoring young students who didn't get the attention they needed in our underfunded schools to help them ensure that they were getting up to par and getting the education that they deserved. And then I transitioned to working with a nonprofit focused on the needs of girls from under-resourced neighborhoods in our state. And I became the board president of that nonprofit. And while I was incredibly proud of the work that that nonprofit did for those girls, I recognized that we weren't changing the material conditions of those neighborhoods that those girls came from, of the lives of their parents. Their parents were still working 2 and 3 jobs and struggling to keep a roof over their heads. Their schools were still underfunded. Their housing makes them sick. And there was always going to be another girl that was going to come through that door until we started actually focusing on the root causes of these issues. And that's what we need leaders in the Senate to be focused on, solving the root causes of poverty and housing injustice and, frankly, the climate catastrophe that is on our doorstep. And that's why I'm running for U.S. Senate, because I think these are things that need to be addressed from the federal level. And I'm tired of leaders who are telling us to wait or that we can't do these things right now, people who are standing in the way of the progress that we need and fighting against the needs and the interests of Delawareans.
You talked a little bit there about your background and your experience. What should voters know about your qualifications for this job that perhaps they don't already know or wouldn't find by just doing a quick Google search of you?
Sure. Yeah. I come out of the world of advocacy and activism and that nonprofit background and wanting to serve in a variety of ways, particularly focused on education advocacy and the rights of women and girls. And I think what is different about what I'm bringing to this position is that background of activism, as well as being a working person in our state. I think we need more representation in our government from top to bottom of people who have experience the problems that the vast majority of people in our country are facing. Having to work multiple jobs to pay my rent, being underpaid in jobs, being frankly sexually assaulted and harassed in jobs. These are all problems that people are continuing to face every single day. We need more leaders who actually have that experience and are willing to stay connected to the working people of our state to bring their voices to the Senate and to Congress. So I really look at it as we need the experiences of actual working people reflected in our representatives. And we need to elect people to seats of our government who see the power of that seat as the tool to use to enact the change they want. You know, I think that some people have asked me, why Senate? Why not school board? Why not city council? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to address that. And the reason that I'm choosing this seat is because the change that I think we need needs to be done from a federal level. And I don't want people on my school board or on my city council who simply see that as a stepping stone to the next job. They are not entry-level positions. They are positions with power to enact change. I want people on my school board who care deeply about the school and want to fight for what's right for students and families in that school. I want people in the Senate who want to address climate change head-on, address our healthcare crisis head-on, and fix the economic and housing injustice and racial injustice in our country. So that is why I'm running for those seats. And I think that what we need is more people who are going to bring the voice of working people into our government and reflect their needs and fight for the solutions that the people are actually demanding.
Let's talk about some issues, starting with the pandemic itself. Mm-hmm. How well do you feel the federal government, specifically Congress, has done in responding to the COVID-19 pandemic? And if there's still no readily available vaccine or established treatments for the virus by the end of the year, what would you want Congress to prioritize in an ongoing response if you were elected?
Yeah, I think the response has really been a failure to this point. We have unclear communication about what people should be doing. we have a federal government that essentially pushed it down to states who have now enacted their own different sets of rules and made it really challenging for people, particularly in a state like Delaware, where people may work across borders and from state to state, family exists in different states. You know, we didn't have a single focused, concerted response to this. And I think the packages that Congress put forward were far too focused on corporate bailouts rather than bailing out the people. You know, people, not even all people, some people got a $1,200 check, and that was supposed to cover them for 4+ months now. And the things that were good, the extended unemployment benefits that actually gave people the stability in their lives through this period, are now expired. Eviction moratoriums are now expired. So the things that I would be prioritizing in a bailout and a stimulus through this period would be things that focus on the needs of the people. Continually monthly payments. There are countries across the globe that are doing that effectively. So monthly payments to every single person in this country, canceling rent and mortgages, and putting moratoriums and holds on any evictions and foreclosures, because we cannot have a public health crisis that cascades into an economic crisis and then cascades into a housing crisis, which is what we are on the brink of right now. In the state of Delaware, 30% of renters are at risk of eviction, and evictions were allowed to start proceeding again on July 1st, and people have no protections in place. And what we really need to be focusing on is how do we bring stability to people's lives, because this is a crisis of no fault of their own. People were pushed out of their jobs for safety, and yet we didn't do what was necessary to actually guarantee their safety and allow them to stay home by paying them and guaranteeing their housing through this period. We also failed to extend any sort of health care to people. So while we had millions of people lose their jobs, they lost their health insurance with it as well. And now millions of people are in a public health crisis and a pandemic without any health insurance. And what we could have been doing is extending Medicare to every single person in this country to ensure that anyone who got sick doesn't run the chance of going into debt from getting sick from coronavirus.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into the economic impact of this pandemic. Obviously, it's thrown the country into a recession, high levels of unemployment. You've talked about some of the issues surrounding all of that. What role can Congress play in getting the economy back on track, especially if this pandemic continues to linger and it takes a while to kind of work our way out of it? Are there things that can be done to make sure the economy gets to where it needs to be, or at least starts working on the road to where it needs to be for a post-pandemic life?
Absolutely. We should be putting money in the hands of working people who are going to spend it. And that is how you actually sustain an economy. You know, putting money into the hands of corporations does not benefit the economy. What ends up happening is that the people at the bottom, who could be spending money, are constrained. They've lost their jobs. They're unsure about the stability of their future. If we instead were putting money directly in the hands of working people, that would be a way to sustain our economy.
Let's talk about another issue that's kind of been working in parallel with this pandemic, and that is the protests throughout the spring and summer that has focused on issues around racial equity. Topics of debate on this have run the gamut from removal of monuments and renaming sports teams to addressing racial disparities in areas like education, housing, as you mentioned earlier, and things like police reform. What do you believe Congress's role is in addressing some of these issues? What can the federal government do in what many people would say is kind of a top-down way address these issues?
Yeah, well, it may be a top-down response, but I think the demands have come from the bottom up, right? And I think that's where change often comes from. And I think what Congress, federal government should be doing is not the performative responses, renaming streets, frankly, even in some cases taking down monuments. While those are things that are all fine, they aren't a real solution to the problem, and they're really not what people are asking for. So what we have been running on, frankly, since the beginning of this campaign, addresses some of these exact issues of people, what people have been demanding in response to police brutality in particular. You know, I believe we need to demilitarize our police. We need to end the programs that the federal government uses to transfer military equipment to local police departments. That is something the federal government could stop and end that program. We need to, more on a municipal level, shift investments and ensure that we are actually investing in communities to help them prosper. You know, the communities that are the most safe are not the ones with the most police. They are the ones with the most resources. So how do we ensure that the communities that need the most help actually get resources rather than just being over-policed, which is often what they get now? You know, I live in the city of Wilmington here. There was a study done last year that looked at data from 2016, and Wilmington was spending more per capita on policing than any other city in the study, and for worse outcomes. So I think that goes to show that continually investing dollars solely in policing without also funding schools and safe housing and ensuring that people have good, stable jobs is not enough to actually create public safety. Public safety has to be a concept that's much broader than that, that includes the health and safety and education and ability to prosper of every single person. And I think that is what we're actually hearing from this movement, is not invest more in policing. Training and implicit bias training and body cams have not proven to make a difference. The city of Minneapolis had a lot of those things in place where the murder of George Floyd happened. So those things do not actually solve the problem. Investing in our communities, ensuring that everyone is guaranteed a good standard of living, is actually what's going to bring about public safety in our country.
The pandemic and these protests have pushed a lot of other issues that would likely have been big issues in this election off maybe to the side a little bit, things like healthcare, like immigration, as you mentioned, or climate change. Is there one of those issues you feel needs to be addressed with urgency by the next Congress?
Yeah, I think healthcare is absolutely that issue, and that's driven by the conversations that I have with Delawareans. I think that Medicare for All is table stakes, particularly for Democrats, but we are seeing it nationally. I think the most recent polling of all Americans showed 69% support for a single-payer Medicare for All system. This is something that people are demanding. We have representatives and senators that are standing in the way of it, and they're siding with corporate donors, big pharma, and insurance companies to, frankly, keep pushing talking points that we know are inaccurate. They tell us people still want choice, but who has choice when their employer chooses the plan or when they lose that job and they no longer have any option? Who has any private insurer that they truly like? I mean, as soon as you go to use your insurance, you'll recognize really quickly how much of a struggle it can be, even when you have quote-unquote good insurance. And they'll tell us that it's too expensive, but we know that's not true because Medicare for All will save us $450 billion a year, as well as save almost 70,000 lives. So Medicare for All is both the pragmatic choice as well as the moral choice, and it's what the people are demanding, and I think we have to continue to organize around it and push for it and fight for it.
I do want to talk about foreign policy as well. What is the biggest foreign policy issue you feel the country is facing, and what should Congress be doing to address it?
I think it, frankly, remains climate change, because climate change is going to create a whole lot of displacement and, frankly, potentially more war if we allow it to continue unfettered. People are going to lose their ability to farm land. We're going to have more climate refugees, people who are going to need to move from places that become uninhabitable. This is a real crisis at a global scale, and I recognize that there are ongoing wars right now. You know, I also believe we need to end the endless wars that we are in. We need to bring troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. We need to take troops out of countries like Nigeria, where war has not been declared, and it's unclear what they're doing in those theaters. However, we really need to also be championing real transformative change that addresses climate change, because that is the number one thing that is going to lead to additional instability in our world.
How important is engaging allies around the world to making those things happen and allowing progress in a number of those areas you kind of ticked off in that last answer?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important, and I think what the U.S. should be doing is setting an example. We can't kind of sit back and wait for allies to take action. I think that we have been an imperial global force for more than my lifetime, obviously, and it's on us to step up and say we are going to change our behavior on a global scale and become more anti-imperialist, pull back troops, end these endless wars, and focus on actually creating peace and stability on our planet.
A very Senate-specific question for you. Should the Senate consider doing away with the filibuster? Why or why not?
Yes. The filibuster upholds white supremacy, and I think that it is out of date, and it prevents the real progress that our country needs to see.
And finally, is there an issue we haven't discussed that you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how could you address it if elected?
I think that is the conversation around economic justice and housing justice, and how many people in our country are living one setback away from total ruin. And I think those are the people that we have to be centering in our legislation and focusing on, because we have an economic system right now that allows some people to amass more wealth than they could possibly spend in a lifetime, while it leaves other people to completely suffer. The Department of Housing and Urban Development estimates that it would take $20 billion to end homelessness. And that's the same amount of money that we've increased the military budget by. We need people who are going to prioritize guaranteeing a dignified standard of living to every single person in this country and fighting for those things that guarantee that, like good jobs, labor power, federal jobs guarantee, and federal investment in public and affordable housing.
Does this pandemic offer an opportunity to make big changes
absolutely.
Like that?
Yes, absolutely. I think that a lot of people have recognized that we cannot simply say we need to get back to normal, because normal was failing millions of us. We instead have to say, how do we get out of this and be better and prevent it from ever happening again and create more stability in the lives of people in America?
Jessica Scrane, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. Candidate conversations are part of Delaware Debates 2020, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communications. Thanks for listening.